All right, everybody. Welcome back to the afternoon sessions here at the Planet Microcap Showcase Vancouver in association with Small Cap Discoveries. And I'm very excited to announce our next keynote presentation here at the event. Joining us to give share his insights is Jesse Gamble, PM at Donville Kent Asset Management.
Hi, guys. I want to start with saying thank you to Robert, Paul, Trevor. This has been a phenomenal few days. Some really good quality companies here and some really good conversations with other investors. So thank you for having us. So Donville Kent Asset Management, there we go. Jason Donville and myself, founded in 2007. I've been there over 13 years with Jason now, and it's the two of us that are, you know, ripping apart companies every day, trying to, you know, visit, do all these kind of stuff. So it's, you know, these insights today are kind of what we're seeing, and hopefully it's helpful. I'll go through some of these quickly because there are a decent amount of slides, and I'll try and get to what's more interesting. Process, we can get to that later, but this one's fairly interesting because this is where we operate. Where we try to operate, we call it kind of our optimal zone in that 100 million to 4 billion, and we own stuff that's 20 million, 25 million, or was and has grown. But what we see, and some of the other speakers have mentioned this, is you get that up market move. So, you know, if you hit $100 million market cap, more people are going to look at you. If you, especially around the $500 million market cap, like that in Canada for a lot of PMs that manage any type of money, that $500 million market cap is fairly significant. So, you know, there's a few names that we'll talk about today that are near that number, right? A lot of times there's no analyst coverage. And then as something grows and becomes more attractive, analysts jump on, institutional ownership. It's you guys all know, for being here, you obviously kind of understand that side of the business. We don't do the pre-revenue unprofitable need for financing, and we'll get into exactly why in a second. So that's kind of that ramp that we usually see play out. So I actually deleted a bunch of slides, one for the sake of time, but two, people like Harold and Paul, and they really hit on where we are in this market. So I'll try and just touch on things that haven't been gone over a bunch. So peak interest rates, people have talked about this. Buffett has a quote about, you know, interest rates are like gravity. So that's what we were fighting against, right? 2022, 2023, we were fighting against the fastest rise in interest rates of all time. And now we think they've peaked. And that's one of the three main preconditions why we think we're in a really good kind of setup for the next bull run, 5 to 7 year small cap cycle. Another is record cash on the sidelines. So I think Harold, again, used the term tidal, like a tidal wave or cash all moving to the sidelines. Well, I think there's $7 trillion sitting in money market funds, and then the other was talking about how much is sitting in PE. There's never been this much cash just sitting on the sidelines. And a lot of the conversations we're having with investors in our fund is, yeah, we had some money in GICs at 5%, but now I'm looking to renew at 3%. Like, that's not as, and it's going to be 2%. And like, so, you know, what's out there? And I think that's going to help kind of flush this market out. And then extremely cheap valuations, which I'll jump to in a sec. Inflation, deflation, we're definitely not macro guys, and we'll really get into the micro and companies in a second. But if you want to have an argument with me later about inflation, we can do it outside because we can talk about this all day, but the one thing I would say is, why did we have low rates pre-COVID? What was in place then, and what's not? What changed? And I would argue nothing, right? So the two main things were demographics. So the population in China is actually declining, like actually going down every year. The population growth is extremely disinflationary, and combine that with all the technology that we're seeing here this weekend and in general. There's a lot of deflationary things in progress, and then a lot of the bottom charts are just how that COVID was more of just a spike, and we do think we're past that. We can jump, if you want to have questions later, we can get into that. This was cash on the sidelines. So this is what's what I made marks on here is the two stars is what happened in 2000 and what happened in 2008. So you go through a poor market and people get scared. It's human emotion. You go to the sidelines, you go to cash. But what that cash on the sideline does, it peaks at peak distress, and then it filters back into the market, and that's what really sustains the next bull run, which happened after 2001, which happened after 2009. And we're at record cash on sideline. That number is, I think, almost closer to $7 trillion now. This is valuations. A lot of the other speakers did a really good job talking about valuations. There was a question earlier in the back left this morning asking about what if you just included just profitable businesses. So the small cap, so the S&P 600 is small cap profitable businesses. So this does exclude anything unprofitable, but again, U.S. based. It's to show you that November of last year was, then this goes back to 1990, was a historical low in valuations, and we're ticking up from there. Like, we've obviously bounced, maybe not as much in Canada, but you know, you usually do very well when you're buying at valuations that we're seeing these days. So this is the meat of the presentation. We're going to talk about compounders, past, present, and future. We're going to talk about two in the past, two in the present, and two in the future. And the idea being, what is a compounder? So there's a lot of ways to make money, especially in small caps, micro caps. And, you know, a lot of times it'll be, oh, it's on 5x earnings, it should be on 10, and I double my money. Great. That's a great return. Then you try and look for the next one and the next one. But what I'm going to try and get to today is, what takes a company from 50 million, 100 million to a billion, to 2 billion, to 5 billion? And we're going to get into that right now. So Boyd Automotive, the green stars when we first started investing in Boyd Automotive in 2015, then the revenue growth and cash margins you see there, that's what we saw at the time, right? That's what you could see. That's what they were reporting. Looks like, you know, growth's picking up. Margins are stable, if not kind of slightly improving, or they were talking about how they were going to improve over time. So that's what we saw. But what was more important, and this is a question we would advise investors to ask management teams or to ask, is, okay, you're profitable. When someone says, oh, look, a micro cap that's profitable, let's jump all over it. And it's like, wait a second, like, what are they doing with those profits, right? Are they just profitable because they're getting a bunch of people calling saying, hey, we need your product. And they're like, okay, we're going to go make it. And then they're just reliant on people calling and wanting the product. Or can they take that capital they're making, reinvest it into their business at a high rate of return, and do that for a sustainable amount of time? So Boyd Automotive stock, when I started investing it in the 50s, got out in the 220s, market cap went up. Obviously, there was share issuance over that time frame. And then we exit, and I'm actually going to use a Dollarama kind of example here as well, is for a lot of these companies, people made this point earlier, is you're small, it's easier to grow. And then law of large numbers, that, you know, you can go from one location to 10, that's phenomenal. Try and go from 10 to 100, harder. Try to go from 100 to 1,000, really hard, right? So Boyd Automotive went from a handful, and I think today they're at 800, right? But that growth has slowed. Margins have kind of stalled out, and it becomes more of a competitive market. So that's a case of, you know, holding it for a significant amount of time, but then moving on. So MTY Food would be another one. Invested in 2008. And this is what you saw during that time. So you saw, you saw revenue growth picking up. You saw cash, really high cash margins. And then, you know, I'll go back to Boyd for a second also. So that's when we invested, that green star. And this is another thing, and this is going to come up in a second when we talk about some other companies, is a lot of people would say you missed it. Right? You missed it. Look at that. You absolutely, the stock's running. You know, I wish I invested at 20. It's already at 50. But then it, you know, it goes to 220 and it goes even, you know, it got over 300, right? So it's that for us, this is what we're looking for. is we're not looking for that one, that trade and then trying to find another trade. That's why we say we have a repeatable process, because it's, you're not just jumping from trade to trade. You're trying to find a long-term compounder that you're going to hold for 10 years. We've held Constellation for 15, 16 years from $24 to $4,400. Like, and it keeps taking the cash, reinvesting it at 22, 24% IRRs, right? So that's what we're looking for. And that's kind of our little niche segment of the market. And that's what we're kind of talking about today. So MTY Food, we invest. Again, this is what you see. It does look cheap. So we probably do want, you know, multiple expansion over this time. Margins are high. Stanley Ma, founder, CEO at the time, he's now chairman, was taking, and he was rolling up these food court. You would recognize these, right? So he goes across Canada. He starts with one or two of these food courts, and he got into it because he was helping them do their accounting. He's like, they don't know how to do accounting. They don't know how to run their businesses. I can do this way better than they can. So he starts, you know, going across Canada. So I think, so today they have close to 8,000 locations, and he started with a handful. And so you're like, well, you know, so then we're investing in 2008. We exit in 2018, stock goes up almost 1,000%. And at that point we exit because he now is across Canada. He has pretty much bought almost all the anything of significance in the food court. And then what they had to actually start to do, and this is what you as investors look for, the business model changes. Okay, now we have to go to the States. Now we have to pay up for acquisitions. Now we have to go into full restaurants, different economics, not as good IRR, not as good payback periods, right? And so the numbers start to change. And that's kind of probably one of our main reasons that we would get out of a business, right? Where your return on capital starts to diminish and there's other things to invest in, right? So that's another example, kind of like a Dollarama. Dollarama starts out with, you start investing in Dollarama, which is phenomenal. They have a 2-month payback on a new location. They open a location, put everything in, it pays back in 2 months. So if you could get into that thing early when they were at 10 stores, 20 stores, right? So I think today they're at 1,200 stores, right? So if you could have ran that thing up. But now what are they doing with cash? They're buying back stock, paying a bit of a dividend, and they're fully reliant. The only way they can grow is just on new housing development. So they just have to wait for stuff to get built, and then they'll put a Dollarama in. So they're not in charge of their growth, right? Which we would argue is the same with M2Y Food. So now we're into the current, what we would say these are our current compounders. So GoEasy, we currently own in the fund, invested in 2017. This one, it's actually a lot easier to understand because they have very good disclosure, but they haven't had an under 20% ROE for years. I think they're projecting 25% ROEs going forward. And the idea being like, don't get off that bus, right? Don't get off the train. Like it has. So this was in 2017. And I'll go back to make sure I know that number. 27 bucks, and now it's, you know, almost 200. I think I'd say it's like 180. It's up, yeah, so invested at 27, it's at 180, 568% return over that time frame. Obviously, there's some volatility in this one. There's some headline risk of, in a sense, of lending and recessions and et cetera, but they continue to execute. There hasn't been a quarter where they didn't compound their capital at a very high rate of return. Now, the stock price might go up and down, but the business, underlying business, continues to compound capital at a high rate of return. The next, what we would call a current compounder, which we own in the fund, is Vital Hub. So this is what we saw in 2019 when we invested in the business. You can see from some of those revenue growth numbers, they just started to kind of put the business together in 2016. 2017, they start to add on some acquisitions, clean them up, and then what we saw in 2019 is, yeah, okay, these guys are off to the races. They had a proven tracker because they've done this before. They grew one, sold it to PE, worked for PE. They know what it's working for. And once their non-competes were over, like, okay, let's do it again. So that was 2019. This is today, $1.60. to, I think, yeah, today it was trading around the same level, close to 880 today. Now they have issued shares. That's why that market cap number is significantly higher than that stock price. And they did that at the beginning to get to a certain scale where they could throw off enough cash to do a lot of these acquisitions themselves. So that's what we saw at the beginning. And then again, you don't get off the train as it's compounding and they continue to throw that capital back into the market. Now, why did the stock really rip last year? Well, one, small caps in general did start to turn last November when this did as well, but they started to show bottom line profitability. They were always throwing off cash. So what the way we look at it is cash earnings. So you add back things like amortization of intangibles, and that's a conversation anyone wants to have, we can have later. But what is the business generating? What is in cash? What are they using that cash for? Can you quantify, is that a high return on capital? And just let that engine run. Why? I have a little question here for you too. So how do we find them early? So obviously they're profitable. You can't compound if you're not generating cash. Can you take that cash and can you reinvest it at a high rate of return? Can you reinvest it at a high rate of return for a long time? So, you know, we all find small cap companies, there's micro caps, and they become profitable, and all of a sudden, you know, you're getting calls and everything, and everyone's like, what about this profitable one? Or it's like, well, what are they using the cash for? Like, oh, they don't need cash to do anything, or they don't know, or it's, yeah, you probably make money because it probably re-rates from 5 times, 8 times earnings to 10, 12 times earnings, right? But it's not what we're looking for in the sense of a compounder. And I think where this, we call it a gap in perceived value, so why don't these things get valued correctly, especially early on, is I have this question for you. So if a company's generating $1 a share, or it's priced at $1 a share, and it grows at 20% for 10 years, what's it worth after 10 years? Just think of a number. What do you think it's worth in your head? Okay, so say it's $1 a share, it grows at 20% for 10 years, and you bought it cheap. So you bought it 10 times and went to 20 times. What do you think that number is in your head? Or what do you think that return is in your head? This is the gap. So take that number, and some of you might get this right, but almost every single time, it's not, right? So a lot of people will do the math, and they say 20% for 10 years, 200%, maybe a bit more for compounding or something like that, but they're off by a multiple. Same thing, 20% for 10 years, 200% times 2, 400, 5, maybe 6, and it's like, no, it's plus 1,000%. That's that magic of compounding, and that's where you see this gap in the market, in the sense of, oh, this company might be a little bit cheaper, or these companies are cheap, I like this one. It's like, well, which one is going to compound for a long period of time? And that's what we get really excited about, is that gap. So it would be interesting if anyone got these numbers anywhere close, I'd be interested to know, because the human mind, it doesn't really think in that way. We think more linearly, and that's in a linear manner, and that's why we think that there's that gap in perceived value. So the next part of the presentation is future compounders. What has these types of characteristics going forward? And I don't think these names might not surprise you, because many of the other presenters have already mentioned these names. But Zedcor, we own in the fund. It's our largest position in the fund. And again, we would argue that we probably know it better than anyone else. That's our job. But why is it a compounder? Why do we think this is, you know, 176 million market cap could end up being a multi-billion-dollar company? And it's because, so I'll take a step back. So Zedcor has security towers. Okay, who cares? It's actually not about the security towers. It's about the services and the problems that those towers solve. And it's much more of a services business. And that's why you can have extremely high margins. Cash, I have next year our projected cash earnings margin of plus 22%. If it was strictly an equipment businesses don't make 20% cash margin. A services business that is solving a company's problem, that they're happy to pay it because you are saving them money. Maybe many of you are actually in this room when they gave their speech, but when it's a win-win for both parties, that's where you can get, you know, you can charge a significant margin over time, right? So high operating cash flow, check, very profitable, at a very high margin. So there's a lot to go back into the business. And here's the thing, at each one of those towers, our estimate is around a 42, 44% IRR, right? So they're costing them $30,000 to make. They're bringing some of that in-house, they're bringing it down to 28,000, say it's 30,000. They don't disclose all these numbers, but once you do, okay, how much are they making in revenue? Maybe they're getting 90, 95% utilization. You go through the numbers and you get to a number where it doesn't matter. It's high enough, right? Plus 40% IRR on this cash, and you just keep recycling it back into the business. Okay, is there a long enough runway for growth? Their whole business is brand new. When people ask about competitors, this whole segment of the business didn't exist 5 years ago. You couldn't put radar, 4K cameras, AI systems with cellular, satellite, streaming to the cloud 5 years ago. Literally, that technology wasn't in place. So now it's in place, and they're the ones that put it in place, have their own in-house monitoring, which is an extremely important point to make, and a high level of service and quality. And they're at around 1,000 towers. If they just roll out to their current customer bases across, they can easily get to 10,000. That's not even including new. And again, I'll let you refer to them on what you think they can get to. But they could finish this year, 1,500 towers, finish next year at 3,000. That's a doubling. And then they can make up to 2,600 at the current capacity a year. But the idea that this thing, if they can continue to reinvest capital at a high rate of return, comes a multi-billion dollar company, and that's why it's our largest position. Another one, they're over in the room over here, is Enterprise Group. Again, I've had this conversation a few times, and people are like, energies and services, I don't care. And again, that's probably where the opportunity lies. Market cap of 117 million. The difference is, again, kind of a fairly new technology, right? So bringing in turbines to replace generators. Why do you care as an investor? Well, that generator versus turbine saves the client. It costs the client roughly one-fifth to one-tenth of the cost, and it checks the box of saving them money and then also reducing emissions. And it makes the company, from our perspective, plus 50% IRRs. It has a high reliability. It saves them money. It checks their ERP, and it's just getting into the market. So one, high IRR, highly profitable. They can take that money, recycle it into the business. Now, is there a long enough runway for growth? So they're at, say, 30 of these units. I think they call them systems. 30 systems. In Canada, in energy could be multiples of hundreds of these across. And then you get into mining, which is even a better market for them because it's more permanent. And that's another multiple hundreds. So could they go from 30 units to multiple hundreds, which puts them into a multi-billion dollar market cap. And the idea being, well, if these are high IRR products and they're continually reinvesting them in, buying more and more, slowly running out of time. The last thing I'll end with, in the sense of us trying to find compounders and what we would look for, is take out that income statement. It looks profitable. Go to the cash flow statement. How much in operating cash are they making? And go to the investing segment. Where are they investing that money? So are they buying cap? Are they buying, new towers? Are they buying new turbines? Or are they buying back stock? Or are they doing nothing? Are they paying a dividend? Are they, what are they using the capital for? And then try and figure out what the IRR is on that. Because over time, the business should compound at the rate it's compounding its capital, reinvested in. If it's reinvesting at 50%, give it 10 years and it will probably have grown almost 50% a year. That's just literally the mathematics of it. So that's what I've prepared. I will be outside. I'll take questions probably for the next 5 minutes. 1 minute, or I'll be outside for the next, 30 minutes, an hour, if anyone wants to talk about anything. Yes, sir. I'm really glad you asked that. He asked about the PEs, and he's probably pulling it from like Yahoo or something. So I would say those aren't the PEs, not even where close to the PEs. And this is where the thing, when I mentioned cash earnings. So if a business is either growing, is growing through acquisition or is growing as quickly as these, you have to look at how much cash they're generating. GAAP reported net income is so useless that it doesn't tell you anything. Again, I think Buffett and Munger say, you know, besides EBITDA, reported GAAP income is useless. And that's where those PEs come from. Constellation Software says it's like 180 times PE, like 20, actually, with how much cash they're generating. So, but then your question is, what would I buy of the two? Zedcor is our largest position, but as of the last week, we've been adding to enterprise. So, yeah. First slide I skipped. Barry, near the beginning? We'll go on.
All presentations will be available for download and online as well, so you can be able to get these.
Was it that one? I think I'm out of time. I will be outside if anyone else.
Thank you.